jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 7 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we've got a heap of guests on. We'll start off with good old trusty FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
Boo. Still going on from last Thursday, mate.
And we've got a nemesis. Moosey is on board to lock horns with you, mate.
Yeah, don't be so salty, FB, mate. All those decisions were signed off, so all good.
And we've got CJ joining us as well. Welcome back, mate.
Hey, guys. At least the umpiring at the Anzac Day game wasn't as bad as the last Rockets Golden State one. So, you know, bad umpiring everywhere.
All right. And with that reference that went square over my head, we'll jump into some Supercoach chat. So before we get into some questions for the week, let's do a quick whip around and see who won for the round. CJ, so that we don't delay the inevitable, I'll start with you because you had a shocker.
Mate, I had one of the worst weeks I've ever had. I didn't even crack 2,000. I scored 1,979. Wow. I doubled my ranking for the season. I blew out from about 14K to 27,914. I think I had every single one of my uniques all have an absolute stinker. Nick Newman didn't help. Yeah, nothing went right for me this week.
Oof. How about you, Moosey?
Yeah, I didn't do so well, probably just below par, 21.05 for me. I'm sitting around 14K, so not great in the rankings, but looking to shoot up a bit. Got the VC on Gorn, which was good, but had Whitfield's 45, Lockhart's 39, Livers lower score, that sort of stuff, and sort of D6 and F6 are killing me. But I guess the main thing is I scored 8 more points to FB Donkey, so it's all good.
Whew.
No, I think the main point is that my ranking is half of yours.
We're just going week to week here, I think. So, you know.
Mark, I guess that reveals your score to an extent.
Well, no good this week, mate. 20.97 again. Not as bad as CJ, but just the uniques like Zach Merritt and Billings just had a bad week. Whitfield is crushing because everyone's going to get him a bit cheaper now. But, yeah, ranked 7,000 pretty much.
Well, I had the winning ticket, I guess, for the week, 21.79. That was enough to push me into the top 10,000 for the first time
Welcome.
This season. Thank you, Mark. I'm very happy to be here and continue my way up the ladder. I think I've pretty much gone up since the start of the season, so I'm looking forward to keeping that momentum going. Did the one trade this week to bring in Ross, and boy, am I glad nice. I did that now that is out or was dropped unexpectedly. So just before we get into questions, a quick whip around in terms of a group update. Our Supercoach Coach group is being led by Kimmy's A-team with her score of 21.13, pushing her into 59th. So congrats to her or him. And then the Supercoach Coach Patreon group, the top score for the week was Scott's team, the Pantsman. He scored 22.97, so big round. Not enough to take the top scoring round of the year so far, but a good score nonetheless. And the overall leader of the Patreon group is still Chris's team, Sports Scientist. He's sitting at 163rd. All right, we'll get straight into the questions because we don't actually have Mark for the entire show. We've got him for another 18 minutes or so before he's got to run off. So we'll hear a bit more from you at the start of the app, Mark, and then we'll continue with Moosey and CJ.
So you're saying I'm the star of the show? That's all right.
Yeah.
We just want to finish with quality.
This is great. We should have this way more often. We've got Liam David's question here from Facebook asking about the best trade down targets for the week. So, rookie trades are dominating this week's conversation. A lot of people wanting to start the one up, one down cycle now that we've had a total of 4 price movements, which is about the right time to be looking at that. Now, Mark, last week we talked about Sam Collins being a trade down target. And I think this week he still looks like a prime trade down target. He had one last price increase, or not last price increase, but he had one further price increase from last week. So he's sitting at about 311K. Is he still the sort of top trade down target for the week?
Yeah, I'm not sure he's the top trade down target, but and realistically, my view is that if you have a rookie on field, I would always like to be taking them up rather than down. So yeah, he's a trade up target.
Okay. But a trade out target nonetheless.
Yeah, look, I think between him and Scrimshaw, it's really close about which one I'd go. But Scrimshaw's looked pretty good, and Collins has only had those three decent scores in a row and has had a couple of lower scores, which could cause a problem. So it's 50-50 on them too. I'll probably get rid of Collins.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking to get rid of Scrimshaw this week with his price at 314.5K, which is pretty damn tempting. Now, outside of those two, there are a few other rookies that have hit close to that 300K price bracket. Dersmer, who still has fairly low break-even. Constable, pretty similar story. And Drew as well, still has 100 in his price movements. Yeah. Maybe next week might be the right week. So, any of those guys potential trade-out targets, considering they still have value left, or would you be looking for rookies that might be a little bit further down that ladder instead?
Yeah, I'd probably look at holding those guys. I've got a bit more cash to make. The one I'm actually looking at the moment is probably Atkins, maybe. He just seems to level it out a bit. He needs a good game to jag some dollars to make there. But for me, I'm sort of thinking maybe Atkins down potentially. It's not a lot of cash. If you went for someone like Hayes, you're getting about 120 out of it roughly. But that's probably where I'm sort of looking at. I'd like to hold the others for a bit longer. They've got a reasonable run after Collingwood as well.
You've got Atkins as well, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, I'm thinking pretty much along the same lines, mate, looking at Atkins for probably Hayes this week just because there's not a whole lot of other options.
Now, we had a few other questions about potential trade-out targets, and we got asked about Clark, about Butters. What do you reckon about those two, CJ? 250K for Butters and 240K for Clark. And they might have a little bit more to go up in price, but their break-even is fairly similar to sort of their average on field.
I think I'd be much more interested in trading out a guy like Atkins over Clark. I reckon Clark will probably come back into the team this week. Atkins might actually make way for Parfitt, so there's an outside chance he gets dropped. I think with this year in particular, with most of our bench rookies all not making a huge amount of money, we kind of need to get every last cent out of them as possible. So I'd be much more interested in kind of looking at an Atkins type. Butters is a kind of guy who could jag another couple of 60s, 70s and maybe go up another 15, 20K. So I'd kind of be a bit more interested in waiting and seeing with those types unless you absolutely have to trade them out.
Yeah, and just to add to that just quickly as well, Scott did come out as well, Chris Scott. He's almost guaranteed a game for Clark, not completely, but I'd be pretty, I pretty much would see him come back in this week. It looks fairly close, I'd say.
Now, thoughts on the Burgess, Bailey Scott and Noah Bolter types, Mark? What do you reckon about those guys? They've just not gone up enough in cash, but if they don't come back in or they don't score well, at some stage we're going to have to bite the bullet. And if this is the week that, you know, teams are on the cusp of starting that upgrade-downgrade cycle and next week it's on in earnest, then this is kind of the last week that you want to be clearing out these potential types?
Yeah, I guess last week would have been a great opportunity for that. And if we had known team sheets well in advance, a few people might have gone through with that, with Burgess and Scott both dropped last week. But I've got all three of those guys, which sucks. But realistically, like, I'm in upgrade mode now starting this week. And so those guys are just not going to be in the plans. Maybe around the buys, I might get to them depending on donuts and things like that. But realistically, it's going to be upgrade, downgrade as often as I can every week from now. And I'm just going to have to hope that those guys come back at some stage. Burgess with Corbett coming in doesn't look great for him. I know Sam Day kicked a few in the week on the weekend in the Needful as well. Expect Bailey Scott to come back. And funnily enough, Bolter's actually playing. He just can't score.
I'm in the situation where I've got a bit of cash in bank. Last week, I did a downgrade, but I didn't do a pairing upgrade with it. And so this week might be an opportunity for me to do an upgrade. Because I may only need sort of 20-30K from a downgrade in order to hit a fallen premium. So if you're in a situation like me, this week might be a pretty good opportunity to clear out one of these types, especially if you, like Mark or myself, have all three of those blokes. The more of these types you carry, the more it limits your cash generation.
So I guess that, I mean, Hayes is the only real guy in the bubble this week, isn't he? There's Answorth, Corbett, Larky, potentially Rotham and Haitley at some point.
Shai Bolton as well might get a recall after having 23 touches and 11 tackles in the VFL.
Yeah, yeah. So, but are you swapping Scott, Burgess or Bolter to any of those guys this week?
Well, I don't think I'd go early on them, but if Rotham or Bolton come back, they've already played the two games, so they'll be on the bubble. But the other guy I was potentially thinking about was Young in the back line for the Bulldogs.
Oh, Lockie Young, yeah.
So I guess at this point, let's get to these downgrade targets and potentially let's talk about these guys on the bubble first. So we've got Hayes, who you've already touched on. He's the guy that we've probably got the most questions about in terms of being on the bubble. And then we've got Young, probably being the other main candidate. Mitch Lewis is also another one at 149,000 as a tall forward for Hawthorn. And anybody sort of tickle your fancy there, Mark?
I think Hayes is probably the more obvious one. His scoring's been a little bit better. He's 23 years old. He's looked all right. Unfortunately, the Bulldogs have been losing, though, and Beveridge is not the most reliable coach. But out of those guys, Hayes is the one that probably sparks my interest. If Rotham was named and Cole was dropped, I'd be possibly tempted to go there as well.
Yeah, sort of. I'd concur on that. Same thing, like, Hayes has scored reasonably well. He's rotating in the midfield and then playing forward. As Doctor said, he's had five seasons in the VFL, so he's got that mature age aspect. He came in round five when Shacky and Suckling and Duray were all out. So Suckling's another couple of weeks away. Duray's another four. So he should get a run at it for another couple of games. That's my sort of call on it. But I still would look quite hard at Rotham if he comes back in.
Can I just ask?
Yeah.
Moosey, like, Bailey Scott is dropped and it might come back at some stage. Do you think that Hayes is good enough that you would swap Scott for him?
I think he's got a little bit more versatility in the midfield, to be honest, and I think he can hold up to it. Like, I looked at a few of his stats over the VFL seasons there, and I know it's only VFL, but he looks pretty solid, fairly durable as well. So, again, like with these rookies, it's a bit of a coin flip at times. He would have started round one if he was in the best 22, you would have thought, probably there through injury. But I think it's his spot to hold. That's my call on it.
I'm surprised there hasn't been as much hawk on Young, especially with the Bulldogs' backline looking, you know, pretty weak at the moment. He plays that third tall who can rebound, even though he's freshly drafted. He did play in the TAC Cup as an overager, having not been drafted out of his 18-year-old season. So he is that 1 year more mature.
They took him at pick six as well, yeah.
In the rookie draft, yeah. But look, I guess I'm just surprised that he hasn't been brought up as much, especially because we've had a few more options in the midfield in terms of downgrade options, but in the back line, outside of Hoare, we probably haven't had the same number of options. And so, yeah, I guess I was a bit more surprised that he didn't get as much of a look at it.
I guess it's the scoring more than anything, 42 and 52.
Like a key defender, yeah.
It's not a lot of points to be bringing someone in with.
Yeah, I suppose. It's just two games is such a short sample size. So I guess I don't necessarily think he's going to continue to be a poor scorer. All it takes is one sort of game to spike up. And at least he's, you know, only at that 120,000 mark, whereas Shai Bolton, who CJ briefly mentioned, 147,000 is his price tag. Mitch Lewis, 149,000. I suppose do either of those expensive forward options tickle your fancy? And in terms of job security at Hawthorn for a key forward, you think Mitch Lewis should also get a fair look at it?
150,000 is just too much for those guys. I'd honestly be waiting for Larky or Corbett personally. Bolton's been dropped after two games already. Mitch Lewis doesn't seem to be much better than Corbett and Larky and is more expensive. So I'd even rather go a week early on Larky personally.
All right. Well, seeing as we are talking about potentially going early on some rookies rather than the current week's bubble boys, let's go to this question here from Nathan from Facebook. And he's asked about Hayes v. Answorth. So the Brisbane rookie that's available both as a backline and as a midfielder. So that DPP flexibility to work with potentially Dersma. Thoughts on Answorth? Did any of you gents see him play on the weekend?
Yeah, I watched that game. He looked really good. I was really impressed with him. He definitely was a back pocket sort of player. He was spent a lot of his time down there, but it's hard to judge because he was playing against the Suns, and it has been a bit easier to score against the Suns this year. So it's hard to judge him for one game. I think that there's also a bit of competition for spots. Brisbane's injury list is getting a bit shorter this week, so I think that they'd like to keep playing him, but last in could be first out. So I think that I'd like to see one more game from him personally.
Yeah, I agree with you there, mate. He was pick 55 last year. And again, it's just one of those things, going early on rookies, it almost always burns you. You know, it's very hard to pick them up and have them go on with it. It's hard enough to pick rookies on two games, let alone one. So I'd probably hold off on him, and he'd probably be a good option next week if he looks the goods this week.
Does that apply to Larkey and Corbett as well? And does that change if Haitley is named to play this week? And you might want two of those four rookies on the bubble the following week if they all stay picked.
Haitley's tough because he might come in for Whitfield potentially, and then does Whitfield come back? And so there's a lot of question marks there, as badly as I'd like the guy. As for Larkey, he kicked three goals and he looked quite good. North are obviously shocking this year, so they might give him quite a good run. And with Corbett, he kicked two goals in that score. So a game at Gold Coast, they do look better this year. I'm not so keen on him myself, really.
Yeah, apparently he's blind in his left eye, or legally blind, which is pretty crazy to be playing AFL. But I think he would have played round one if he didn't have a bit of an injury issue late in the preseason. I think Corbett, out of all of them, probably has the best job security, which does not bode well for Burgess, unfortunately. But I really liked the look of Larkey. I think that North will want to play that backup ruckman. Goldstein, they don't seem to like putting Brem Brown in there, and I think that Larkey is a good chance of going ahead of Tom Campbell for that spot. And he looked great on the weekend. I really thought he was a pretty good player, and I'm keen. I know he kicked three goals and his scores are probably a bit overrated, but I did like Larkey quite a lot. But no, I wouldn't be going early on any of them if I can avoid it.
And just add to that, he has been in the system 2 years as well. He was drafted in 2017, so he's not a first year.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is none of the rookies who have played one game, we should be going early on, and all the rookies on the bubble this week, except for maybe Hayes, don't look great.
Slim picking.
So if you don't have a downgrade option in your midfield this week, or you're not comfortable enough with Hayes to downgrade a subpar player, like a Butters, for example, and you're wanting to do a downgrade, like what are we recommending, Mark? And maybe this can be your final question before you sign off, mate.
My thoughts are that I'd really like to get in a time machine and go back last week and no team sheets in advance and take both Baker and Ross. That would be my ideal scenario. Is that not an option?
Oh, so helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're kind of screwed a little bit, and you may not have an opportunity to do that, or we might get some selection surprises. Though I don't think we'd be a responsible podcast to advertise to anyone to go early on a rookie, and if I don't think that Young has the job security or scoring potential to be a good pick either, then I can't really recommend either of those strategies. So if I had to do it, I'd probably go Larkey. My final word would be that I think Tim Kelly is an absolute super buy this week, and coming off the two toughest tags in the league of De Boer and Hutchings in the last few weeks, Geelong's draw opens up after this week against the Bombers. So I think he is an awesome get this week, and I'll be likely bring him in.
Like that advice, mate, which means you need to find a downgrade. So good luck with that.
Hayes, mate, Hayes, Hayes.
Okay, thanks for joining us.
Have fun.
See you, bud.
Bye, Mark.
CJ, we haven't had a heap of your thoughts on these rookies. What are your general thoughts, mate? Any sort of final words from you on these rookies?
Hate where we're at the moment. I've got about 250K sitting in the bank because I went early on Ross. Or I went on Ross last week. Same situation as Mark. Would have really liked to be able to go Baker, but
at least you got cash in bank.
Like. Yeah, at least I have cash in bank. I think this week I won't be bringing in anybody, or I might potentially bring in Hayes this week, particularly if Atkins is dropped. I think if that happens, then I'll bring in Hayes, but I don't want to trade a Bailey Scott type to him because I feel like Scott still has money to make and could get named again.
I think out of Burgess, Scott, and Bolter, I would be trading Burgess first, Bolter second, and Scott last.
I'd trade Bolter before Burgess. I honestly don't think he can make any more money.
I don't think that Burgess will get back in.
Yeah, and me, I've got all three as well, and I'm just waiting for, I think Bolter can jag a 80 or 90 score. He had clanger central on the weekend, as many clangers as he did touches, and he's only playing 60% game time, but he really has the makeup and the opportunity. I think he could jag a score. So for that reason, for me, he's going to stay down there for me. And I think Scott and Burgess, I can't touch them at 170K. I think I'm just going to leave them, and I'll upgrade around them.
I have been optimistic on Bolter, going, well, you just need to have one game where everything comes together. But he feels like he's got two hands where his feet should be.
Two feet where his hands should be.
It's just not really helping.
Well, I think he's a bit of an undersized ruck when he's hitting out, so he tends to be giving frees away in that scenario as well. But yeah. He's done some good things, you know. He has. A couple of good plays, and I think, didn't he get 100 in the JLT or something like that?
Yeah, he did. That's why everyone selected him.
So, you know, I'm happy to leave him there because it would burn if you traded him out and he bangs a 90 out, you know. So
his job security is also very good. Like, Riewoldt's just been like, Riewoldt's out for another six. Like, I think no matter how poorly he plays, like, there's still going to be a spot for that player.
So I already feel like the quality of the discussion's increased since FB's left, don't you?
I do worry with Bolter that even if he scores a 90, he backs it up with a 14 and a 23, and it matters for nothing.
Very achievable, yeah.
Oh, God. Anyway, let's move off the rookies. I think you're in a fairly compromised option if you are looking for a downgrade target this week. So you'll basically have to decide between taking a risk on a player who might get dropped after that their second game, or taking a risk on a bubble boy who might not have the scoring potential you'd ideally look for in a downgrade target. So there's some decision that you'll have to make that will be a bit more tailored to the team that you have and where you need to make your downgrade, or where it's best for you to make your downgrade. Now, let's move on to some other questions. This next one's from Engelbert Sebastian on Facebook. He's asking whether or not Brad Crouch is a keeper, or Crouch owners should be looking at moving him on. He's priced at 466,000, and although he's not scored terribly, he's only averaging 95 for the season so far, which is not exactly what you would have liked for a bloke that started the season at 418K. With Fife looking like a goodbye this week, do you reckon it's the opportune time to be trading out a Brad Crouch type?
Yeah, I think the same person that sits in the situation is Libba to a degree. And for me personally, I can see why some people would do it, but I would much rather concentrate on the weaker positions on field on a D6 or F6 type. I really think that Crouch is really not going to lose any money. He gets enough of the pill to certainly score quite well, and there's no reason whatsoever he can't go on a run of a couple of on some good hundreds. You can trade him up later. So for me, I would hold him, and I'd look at your D6 and F6s, those sorts of areas.
Yeah, I think Crouch at least is consistent. He's basically doing close to what you paid for him. I'd rather trade out a guy who is pumping out erratic 30s and then 70s. I'm looking at you, Parker, and kind of get some of your worst scoring off field rather than trying to go for a 10-point per game upgrade, maybe a 15-point per game upgrade by going Crouch to a Fife type.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I agree with the parallel that you've drawn with Libba. He scored a 150 when he was still priced in the 300 range, and that saw him accelerate his momentum toward 500K, but it didn't actually see him hit, you know, what I think his true peak price will be. And Crouch, you can argue, will also hit sort of a better price later down the track. So to me, the question really is more about, is Fife enough of a must-have at his price point of 560 to be trying to move to him this week? And, you know, if you look at Libba as an example, he's averaging 105 compared to Fife, 115. But even if you sort of extend it to 120 versus 100, that's a 20-point improvement that you get. And I'm sure you can find an upgrade elsewhere on the field. Yeah, like you got gents have mentioned, those rookies that are scoring in the 50s or 60s and easily get a similar or better jump on other positions on ground. So I think that's
100%.
Yeah, sound advice. Now, we've got a more general question from Daniel Castor from Facebook asking, how to prioritize where to first upgrade? It's a bit of a challenging question because so many factors are at play, but do you have any broad rules that, you look at, Moosey?
Yeah, well, it's probably a bit similar to what we're just talking about. I'm always looking at the spread of points on ground where the weakest links are. And you've obviously got to overlay that with who's coming up and who's value. So for me, my weakest spots are definitely D6 and F6, but more so D6 because I've got more at F4. So because I'm running three rooks in defense there, I can bring a lead in, which gets my D6 off the ground, and it's a huge increase. So I would always look at your weakest of scoring position where your pain is, and that's where I go.
Completely agree. The only other factor that might sway me is if you see a target like Tim Kelly in the forward line, that might make me lean more towards upgrading F6 to Tim Kelly over upgrading D6 to a guy like Laird. Or if you think Fife's a must-have and you can upgrade. But, yeah, I think normally I just look where I'm hemorrhaging points, and for me that's probably D6 and F6 at the moment. So I'd either be looking at a guy like Laird or preferably Tim Kelly if I didn't already have him.
Yep, very much agree with that. You want to be considering the balance between the upgrade that is available to you in potential points increase, depending on where you're looking on ground, and also the trade target being good value. So if you've got somebody who's obviously good value at 470K in a TK versus Laird, I mean, there's a good buy, but I think still costs another 60K more. If you think that they can deliver fairly similar points on field and both are top six candidates in their position, then the value helps take the cake. And sometimes you might even sacrifice 5 points per game on field to get a better value premium instead, because 5 points per game is nothing.
60K is a non-negligible amount of money as well.
Yep.
Yeah, and I guess I just add to that without overcomplicating it is always to look forward to what you're thinking about doing the next week, because that also can assist you in your trade this week. So taking that better value option this week might allow you to get that trade next week that you couldn't have got. So,
absolutely.
Good call. All right, next question asking who the number one upgrade target is this round. It sounds like both CJ and Marker have TK as the number one trade-in target, and I think I've got to agree with that as well. If you look at the remaining sort of strength of schedule or who each team has left to play, Geelong has, I think, fairly comfortably the least threatening draw on the run home. They played all their tough opposition right up front. And
we're still top of the ladder.
Out of the top five premiership favourites on the betting market at the moment, obviously we can't play against ourselves and we're in one of those. So of the potential four other opponents, I think we only play Richmond once in the remaining rounds, whereas every other team has at least two games against one of those top five favourites. So
can I add a layer into that as well? Mm. I look at I've also got some stats here on the Supercoach pie and how easy teams are score against, and you look at both wins and losses. And when you actually look at that, when you're looking at draws, for instance, for Richmond, when you look at Richmond, just going through the stats there, they're the actually easiest team to score against in both wins and losses. So when you're actually looking at how much pie is available, clearly good players will still score. This is more about tier two, tier three players.
Yeah.
But Richmond are definitely the easiest to score against. And the hardest one at the moment is GWS. They're number two for points in a win. They take the second most amount out of the pie in a win, and they take the most points in a loss. So that's something also to consider. And I've got a little thing on the run over the next month. West Coast Eagles have the best draw from a point of view of available pie against their opponents, and Collingwood have the worst. That's where that sits.
Very, very insightful stuff, mate. FB Donkey does not come prepared with this sort of information.
I'm all over you, FB.
I really like that, and hopefully that gives some of our Jack Darling, Josh Kennedy owners out there a little bit of solace, because they've been smashed in the last couple of weeks in terms of key position forward scoring, and also sort of potentially highlights them as trade-in targets after this week. I think Darling's break-even's 160+, and he's priced at 330K. If you bring him in at 300K, as he's about to hit a pretty smooth run, that could be a very, very good opportunity. And so by that token, any coaches holding on to Darling and have already experienced such a big price slide, unfortunately, should probably hold on if they're looking like potential risky but trade-in targets nonetheless.
Yeah, I think so, because otherwise you're locking in the loss. And just based on the data I was giving you there, the Eagles, Dogs and Giants, they've got the best run over the next month, and the Saints, Carlton and Pies have got the worst run over the next month. So FB Donkeys, Billings might have a hard time of it.
Woo! All right, this next question is from one of our patrons. His name is Larry, and he's asking about thoughts on Hooley as an upgrade target. So started the season off with a bang, got injured, and then when he came back, had one quiet score and then has gone big again. So he's averaging pretty damn well at the moment for a bloke who's still priced at 441,000. He's averaging 109 for the season so far. And I guess the question is, does he return to his high-scoring ways? At his best, he's been a fringe top defender, so sitting about sort of the 7 to 10 mark in terms of ranking heading into the end of a season. Would you consider him at all, Moosey?
Yeah, look, the value, I can see why, right? Like, he's averaging 108 from the three games, priced at 441K. So the value is amazing. But I'm still a little bit worried. What happens when Short comes back? Will that affect him? And then when you actually look at the total pool of upgrade options, I've got Lloyd, Whitfield, Hearn, Sicily, and Laird ahead of him. So that's five. And I'd put him in my rankings, probably fighting with Stewart for six. But most of us have Williams and Smith, or a lot of us have Williams and Smith, which they may end up staying. So if I'm looking at the bigger picture side of things, I'd have to take all that into consideration. Now, we can't always get the best of the best in the line. You've got to take value when it's there. So I can understand people taking a punt on him, but I'd just be wary of Short.
Yeah, I think as a guy who's never averaged more than about 95, 95 isn't exactly what I want from my guy who I'm probably, as you said, looking to bring in as my D4. It's a bit too risky for me.
Yeah, look, I don't mind the selection, but I think probably the best point I've heard was sort of looking at him as a potential top six option and who you'd be passing up to potentially bring him in. There's another option that I like a fair bit more at a similar-ish price point, and that's Crisp, who was a top six player last year. He's basically bottomed out. He went down another 2K, having scored 79 on the weekend. His break-even 74. His price is 460K. Now, he's had four games under 90, which is not ideal, but you know, only one below 70, so 56, 71, 79, 83, and then two scores above 110, 116 against Brisbane and 123 against Richmond. So he's not going brilliantly right now, but if you want to bring a bloke in who's dropped a bit in price over the first few rounds, you're generally having to take a risk that they'll turn around that form. Now, if you say that Crisp hasn't had the best start to the season, is still averaging 88, and you see him improving on that, he's at a pretty damn attractive price point as well. But I think it goes without saying that the top backline trade-in option this week is Rory Laird at 531,000. Yeah. He's bottomed out properly now. He just scored his highest score for the season at 124. People say he started the season off quietly. He's still averaging 100 for the start of the season, with his lowest score being 84. So now's the right time to jump on if you have the cash or the appetite to upgrade in the back line.
Yeah, he's the guy I'll be bringing in this week. Behind Tim Kelly, who I already have, I put him at number two for the week for targets to bring in, with probably five ranked at number three.
Awesome. Now, next question is from Blair Hart from Facebook, and he's asking about whether or not the mid-season draft is going to affect Supercoach. Now, this is something that I've been thinking about for a little bit, and I just wanted to get your gents' thoughts on this. But we talk a lot about the potential for cash generation to be more limited this year, and I wonder whether or not the mid-season draft is going to be a bit of a savior, because essentially it's there to bring in top-up players for injuries that, or for players that have had a blistering start in the seconds, and hopefully should deliver us some additional rookies. Is that being a bit too optimistic, or have you gents considered that as a potential saving option if we're struggling to get cash generation going?
Yeah, look, I've definitely considered it. Do you know what round it is? Is it round 8 or 10, round 10 or 11 or something like that?
May 27th, after round 10.
Okay. So it's pretty timely, really, because everybody's upgrading at that time very heavily. And most people that are up the front are usually looking to complete teams almost at the end of the bye rounds. So maybe we get a gem or two. Maybe a Gibbons type pops up and fits into a nice little role perfectly. We would have seen, 10 rounds or 8 or 9 rounds of all the teams play, and we'll have a good feel for what roles are actually available, where the LTIs are. So, yeah, I think it may potentially have a profound effect on what we're trying to do. Or then again, it may not. It may just be nothing and there won't be anything required. But I think it's only a positive. There can't be any negatives come out of it.
I think it might actually give you an opportunity to trade a guy like O'Brien down to a bargain price ruckman if a ruck option for a team goes down. I know in previous years, Geelong would have been pretty interested in picking up a mature-bodied ruckman when we've had a few guys struggling. Same with key position players. I think wouldn't be surprised to see someone get pulled out of the VFL, the Sandfall, the Kneeful, who's been on a hot tear in the forward line for a team like Richmond right now. Would be pretty interested in bringing in a tall forward if they could.
Yeah, and they're only going to be picking, the players that are really in form at the time. So you're looking at people that'll be right up the top of the votes that are basically looking really solid. So yeah, I think it's going to be a positive thing, and we might see a gem or two come through.
Just before the buys start as well, so hopefully that helps out with downgrade options when sometimes that can get pretty dicey. The players that you trade in or getting games in round 10 are often in and out of their respective sides. Now, next section is the overrated v. underrated section of the show, which we do each week. And this week, the player that I've chosen is a bloke that's been really having a brilliant start to the season.
Is it Boke?
No.
Go on.
It's a guy that Faz just traded into his team. Darren Pitt, one of our patrons, has asked about him. Is Caleb Daniel the real deal? Now, I've had some skepticism about picking a half-back flanker in the forward line, where generally the weakest scoring position and the toughest position to get consistent scoring tends to be the back line. But Caleb seems to be getting it done. He's still priced reasonably, $486,000. He's averaging 102.5 so far for the year and ultra consistent. His scoring range has been between 93 and 120 points so far this season.
I'm going to go out there and say appropriately rated by now. I think the forward line this year, we don't seem to have quite as many midfielders available, with the exception of kind of Dangerfield almost and Boak. Almost everyone else in there seems to actually be playing quite a few minutes up forward. F6 is a spot I think is fairly forgiving for a kind of guy who can average around about 100. At this point, yeah, neither over nor underrated.
Yeah, look, for me, I'm going to go appropriate rated also. One of our vets on the forums there, Hawker, posted up some details. I'm just looking at the moment because there's some talk around Suckling returning and will that affect him. And essentially the way it sits in 2019, his games with Suckling, he's averaged 103 and without Suckling, 101. I know it's only a small sample size, so I don't know whether that's really going to affect him. And they love getting the ball in his hands, and he seems to be the first guy back to that square there every single time. So I'm liking what I'm seeing. It looks quite consistent. I'd say it's appropriately rated.
He's only in 4% of teams at the moment. He's in under 8,000 teams. Oh. So he is probably appropriately rated as a trade-in target, but definitely underrated as an actual selection. So if you're looking for a bit of a unique player out there, Caleb Daniel, as at worst, your F6, I would have thought, is going to serve you very well there. And at that price point, we're talking Tim Kelly sort of numbers, and he's not that far off in terms of average. He's certainly a pretty good option. I know he was struggling to score a bit at the start of the game in the last round that's just played. I know Faz was watching him very closely as we watched the game together, but he's just so consistent with his ball use, doesn't waste a disposal, and with Bulldogs having the ball pumped into their back line a little bit, he's had more than enough opportunity to score points as the selected man out of taking the ball out of defense. So seemed to love getting the ball into his hands, and for very good reason. Punchy short kicks and a good decision maker bodes very well in the back line. Now, to finish off the week, as we do each week, let's head to a quick captain's corner. Now, not too sure whether either of you gents have done too much looking at potential captaincy options. So I'll take the floor if anyone wants to put their hand up first.
Oh, look, I'll have a crack at it from my end. Yeah, from my options, we've got, obviously everyone's looking at Grundy and Gawn. They've been servicing us pretty well. We've just got to remember that Grundy's V Ryder and the Lysett combo. We've got Gawn. He's against an informed big boy McAvoy. And does Neil get the Hewitt tag? That's something you need to have a look at also. McRae's been playing a little bit forward and coming off a lowish score. He may bounce back. So that's, I guess, all the negatives. But what I'm probably looking at with Burgess and Bynes, they're playing on a Saturday night, so Bynes being out, Burgess being out, I think I'll probably take a crack at either a Grundy or Gawn into a Cripps. I think it's probably where I'll probably look for mine.
Yeah, I really like Cripps as the backup captaincy option against North, where they might just notch up their first win of the season after being very competitive in their matches so far this year. I'm going to throw in another sneaky vice captaincy option in Travis Boak. Now, he doesn't have quite the upside that the other blokes have had, but he's been averaging very high possession count, mostly in the mid to high 30s so far. And then he's playing Collingwood, who typically don't put as much pressure on the opposition midfielders, choosing to run their brilliant clearance players one-on-one instead of running with the tag. So Boak might do all right on the Friday night. CJ, anybody else you're considering, mate?
I mean, given how much he's annoyed me this season, I'm loath to mention him, but I am actually considering Clayton Oliver this week, playing against Hawthorn on the Saturday afternoon. Could finally, well, other than run two against Geelong where it was wet, could really turn around. He's shown a lot of flashes this year of why we all picked him in previous seasons. If it starts bucketing down in Melbourne on Saturday, I'd be very interested in Clayton Oliver. Also, if Atkins gets dropped on the Sunday, I might actually roll the dice and go the VC on McRae and then roll into the captaincy on Cripps.
Yeah, and with Oliver as well, I think Viney's out for a couple of weeks now. So I'm not sure how that affects the mix. And it might help Brayshaw more so, but who knows? It could have a good effect on it. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, gents, for joining on the show. Moosey, your first podcast so far for the season, and it's been a really good one, really, really good insight that you brought to the table and extra bits of research. So thank you. Do you have any last words for our listeners?
Thanks for having me on the podcast again. Last words is don't put all your eggs in one basket with your trades. Just look forward to what you're possibly going to be doing next week, because the trade you're making this week, it almost always affects what you're doing next week. That's pretty much my last bit. So thanks, guys.
Awesome. And CJ, your second ep for the season. Any final words from you, mate?
Look, all I'm going to say is even if you have a terrible week, the next week is bright because you can make trades. I'm very much hoping that bringing in Rory Laird to my team cracks a bit of a smile and makes me forget about the week that's just gone by.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks very much, gents. And with that, we'll sign off for another week. See ya.
Bye.